So today I'm going to share with you excerpts from a sermon by Martin Luther King Jr. called Shattered Dreams, which was given by him in about 1962. It refers to segregation, which we know is different now than it was in 1962, and yet we also know that we have a lot of systemic racism and injustice, and also injustice against LGBTQ folks still in our country. So when he talks about segregation, I think we have enough to fill in there for the work we have to do. So here's from Martin Luther King Jr. Our sermon today brings us face to face with one of the most agonizing problems of human experience. Very few, if any of us, are able to see all our hopes fulfilled. So many of the hopes and promises of our mortal days are unrealized. Each of us, like Schubert, begins composing a symphony that is never finished. There is much truth in George Friedrich Watt's imaginative portrayal of hope in his picture entitled Hope. He depicts Hope as seated atop our planet, but her head is sadly bowed and her fingers are plucking one unbroken harp string. Who has not had to face the agony of blasted hopes and shattered dreams? If we turn back to the life of the Apostle Paul, we find a potent example of this problem of disappointed hopes. In his letter to the Corinthians at Rome, Paul wrote, "When I take my journey into Spain, I will come to you." It was one of Paul's great hopes to go to Spain, the edge of the then known world, where he could further spread the Christian gospel. And on his way to Spain, he planned to visit that valiant group of Christians in Rome, the capital city of the world. But Paul never got to Rome in the sense that he had hoped. He went there only as a prisoner and not as a free man. He spent his days in that ancient city in a little prison cell, held captive because of his daring faith in Jesus Christ. He died a martyr's death in Rome before the hope of his mission could be fulfilled. Life is full of this experience. There is hardly anyone here this morning who has not set out for some distant Spain, some momentous goal, only to find that we had to settle for much less. Our dreams are constantly tossed and blown by staggering winds of disappointment. Mahatma Gandhi, after long years of struggle for independence, dreamed of a united India, only to see that dream trampled over by bloody religious war between the Hindus and Muslims, which led to the division of India and Pakistan. Woodrow Wilson dreamed of a League of Nations, but he died with the dream shattered. The Negro slaves of America longed for freedom with all their passionate endeavors, but many died without receiving it. Jesus prayed in the Garden of Gethsemane that the cup might pass, but he had to drink it to the last bitter dregs. The Apostle Paul prayed fervently for the thorn to be removed from his flesh, yet the pain and annoyance continued to the end of his days. Shattered dreams, blasted hopes, this is our life. But what does one do under such circumstances? This is the central question, for we must determine how to live in a world where our highest hopes are not fulfilled. It is quite possible for one to seek to deal with this problem by distilling all their frustrations into a core of bitterness and resentment of spirit. The persons who follow this path develop a hardness of attitude and a coldness of heart. They find fault in everything and everybody, and they continually complain. The terrible thing about this approach is that it poisons the soul and scars the personality. Another possible reaction to the experience of blasted hopes is for the individuals to withdraw completely into themselves. They become absolute introverts. They allow no one to come into their lives, and they refuse to go out to others. Such persons give up in the struggle of life. Their disappointed hope leads them to a crippling cynicism. Another way that people respond to life's disappointments is to adopt a philosophy of fatalism. This is the idea that whatever happens must happen, and that all events are determined by necessity. The people who subscribe to this philosophy resign themselves to what they consider their fate. Since they believe that humans have no freedom, they seek neither to deliberate nor to make decisions. They simply wait passively for external forces to do for them. Often, the fatalists are very religious people who see God as the determiner and controller of destiny. Everything they feel is God's will, however evil it happens to be. Such fatalism is based on a terrible conception of God. It sees everything that happens, evil and good alike, as the will of God. Any healthy religion will rise above the idea that God wills evil. It is true that God has to permit evil in order to preserve the freedom of humanity, but this does not mean that God causes it. That which is willed is intended, and the idea that God gives cancer to this person or inflicts dementia upon another is rank heresy. Such a false idea makes God into a devil rather than a loving father. So fatalism is a tragic and dangerous way to deal with the problem of unfulfilled dreams. What then is the answer? We must accept our unwanted and unfortunate circumstance and yet cling to radiant hope. The answer lies in developing the capacity to accept the finite disappointment and yet cling to the infinite hope. In speaking of acceptance, I do not mean the grim, bitter acceptance of those who are fatalistic. I mean the kind of acceptance that Jeremiah achieved as expressed in his words, "This is my grief, and I must bear it." This means sitting down and honestly confronting your shattered dreams. Place it in front, at the forefront of your mind, and stare daringly at it, and then ask yourself, "How can I transform this liability into an asset?" Almost anything that happens to us can be woven into the purposes of God. It may lengthen our cords of sympathy. It may break our self-centered pride. Even the cross, which was willed by wicked men, was woven by God into the redemption of the world. Many of the world's most influential personalities have exchanged their thorns for crowns. Charles Darwin suffering from a recurrent physical illness. Robert Louis Stevenson plagued with tuberculosis. Helen Keller inflicted with blindness and deafness, all responded not with bitterness or fatalism, but rather by the exercise of a dynamic will transforming negative circumstances into positive assets. George Friedrich Handel confronted the most difficult and trying circumstances in his life. Says his biographer, his health and his fortunes had reached the lowest ebb. His right side had become paralyzed and his money was all gone. His creditors seized him and threatened him with imprisonment. For a brief time, he was tempted to give up the fight, but then he rebounded again to compose the greatest of his inspirations, the epic Messiah. So the Alleluia chorus was born, not in a desired Spain, but in a narrow cell of undesirable circumstances. Wanting Spain and getting a narrow cell in a Roman prison, how familiar an experience is that? But to take the Roman prison, the broken, the leftover of a disappointed expectation, and to make of it an opportunity to serve God's purpose, how much less familiar that is. Yet, powerful living has always involved such a victory over one's own soul and one's situation. We as a people have long dreamed of freedom, but we are still confined to an oppressive prison of segregation and discrimination. Must we respond to this disappointed hope with bitterness and cynicism? Certainly not, for this will only distort and poison our personality. Must we conclude the existence of segregation is a part of the will of God and thereby resign ourselves to the fate of oppression? Of course not, for such a course would be blasphemy, because it attributes to God something that should be attributed to the devil. Moreover, to accept passively an unjust system is to cooperate with that system. Our most fruitful course of action will be to stand up with a courageous determination, moving on non-violently amid obstacles and setbacks, facing disappointments and yet clinging to hope. It will be this determination and final refusal to be stopped that will eventually open the door of fulfillment. While still in the prison of segregation, we must ask, how can I turn this liability into an asset? By recognizing the necessity of suffering in a righteous cause, we may possibly achieve our humanity's full stature. If only to save ourselves from bitterness, we need the vision to see the ordeals of this generation as the opportunity to transfigure ourselves and American society. When I first flew from New York to London, it was in the days of propeller-type aircraft. The flight took over 9.5 hours. On returning to the States from London, I discovered that the flying time would be 12 hours and a half. This confused me for a moment. I knew that the distance returning to New York was the same as the distance from New York to London. Why this difference of 3 hours, I asked myself. Soon, the pilot walked through the plane to greet the passengers. As soon as he got to me, I raised the question of the difference in flight time. His answer was simple and to the point. You must understand something about the winds, he said. When we leave New York, the winds are in our favor. We have a strong tailwind. When we return to New York from London, the winds are against us. We have a strong headwind. And then he said, don't worry though, these four engines are fully capable of battling the winds, and even though it takes 3 hours longer, we will get to New York. Well, life is like this. There are times when the winds are in our favor, moments of joy, moments of great triumph, moments of fulfillment. But there are times when the winds are against us, times when strong headwinds of disappointment and sorrow beat unrelentingly upon our lives. We must decide whether we will allow the winds to overwhelm us, or whether we will journey across life's mighty Atlantic with our inner spiritual engines equipped to go on in spite of the winds. This refusal to stop, this courage to be, this determination to go on living in spite of, is the God in humanity. The person who has made this discovery knows that no burden can overwhelm them and no wind of adversity can blow their hope away. Certainly, the Apostle Paul had this type of courage to be. His life was a continual round of disappointments. He started out for Spain and ended up in a Roman prison. Everywhere he turned, he faced broken plans. He was jailed, mobbed, beaten, and shipwrecked in his gallant program of spreading the gospel of Christ. But he did not allow these conditions to overwhelm him. I have learned, he said, in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content. Paul did not mean that he had learned to be complacent or to resign himself to some tragic fate. Paul meant that he had learned to stand up amid the disappointment of life without despairing. He had discovered the distinction between a tranquil soul and the outward accidents of circumstance. He had learned to live from within instead of from without. The persons who make this magnificent discovery will, like Paul, be the recipient of true peace. Indeed, they will possess that peace which passeth all understanding. The peace which the world understands is that which comes with the removal of burden or pain. It is a peace which only comes on beautiful days when the skies are clear and the sun shines in all of its beauty. It is a peace that comes when the pocketbook is filled and the body has no aches or pains. But this is not true peace. Real peace is something inward, a tranquility of soul amid terrors of trouble. It is inner calm amid the howl and rage of outer storm. True peace is like a hurricane. Around its circumference rages howling and jostling winds, while at its center, all is serenely quiet. This is why true peace passeth all understanding. It is easy to understand how one can have peace when everything is going right, but it is difficult to understand how one can have unruffled tranquility when one is down and out, when the burden still lies heavy on one's shoulders, when disappointment is inescapably real. True peace is peace amid storm, tranquility amid disaster. It is a calm that exceeds all description and all explanation. Peace was Jesus' chief legacy. He said, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give unto you." This peace is there for us to inherit if we will only accept it through faith. In the final analysis, our ability to deal creatively with shattered dreams and blasted hopes will be determined by the extent of our faith in God. A genuine faith will imbue us with the conviction that there is a God beyond time and a life beyond life. Thus, we know that we are not alone in any circumstance, however dismal and catastrophic it may be. God dwells with us in life's confining and oppressive cells. With this faith, we can accept nobly what cannot be changed and face disappointments and sorrow with inner poise. We will have the power to absorb the most excruciating pain without losing our sense of hope. We will then know that in life and death, God will take care of us. And it ends with the lyrics of a song, and I don't know the tune of the song, so I will simply read you the lyrics. Don't know if some of you might recognize. Be not dismayed, whate'er betide, God will take care of you. Beneath his wings of love abide, God will take care of you. Through days of toil, when heart doth fail, God will take care of you. When dangers fierce your path assail, God will take care of you. God will take care of you through every day or all the way. God will take care of you. Amen.